This is Charudas welcoming you to study sessions in the Bhagavad Gita. We're on the 13th chapter today. It's called Nature, the Enjoyer and Consciousness. Going to dwell again on the 17th verse. I'll read the Sanskrit, the English, and then we'll comment. Avivaktam ca bhuteshu, vibhaktam iva chastitam, bhuta bharatir chatajgeham, gashishnu prabhavishnu cha. Translation. Although the Supersoul appears to be divided among all beings, he is never divided. He is situated as one. Although he is the maintainer of every living entity, it is to be understood that he devours and develops all. Be back in a moment. At the end of the last class, we were talking a little bit about the Lord in the heart and how he is the source of both knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. And first we explained how, if we want to forget God, God gives us such direction that we can forget him forever. Just like in a dream, if you're totally absorbed in your dream body, you can't simultaneously be aware of the body that's sleeping comfortably in your bed. Let's say in your dream, you're in a jungle, and as you come around a bend in the forest, you come face to face with a snarling tiger. The tiger starts running in your direction and leaps. His teeth and claws aim for your throat. He sinks his teeth into your throat, finds the jugular vein, starts tearing your throat apart. You start screaming. See, if you were simultaneously aware that you were lying in your bed at home very safely and that this was only a dream, you wouldn't start screaming and perspiring and thrashing around in your bedclothes in the first place. But the fact is that the ego can't be divided. The ego has to be directed in one way or identify with one particular body, and it can't simultaneously identify with two types of bodies. As soon as you wake up from your dream, you remember that I'm John Smith and I live in Beverly Hills, I have to go to work today, and you totally forget about your dream body. So if you want to forget God, then that's very easily achieved by identifying with the present body that you have. You see what I mean? Originally, we're all spirit souls, part and parcel of God. These bodies belong to God, they're meant to be used in His service. But if you want to think of yourself as an American, as a black, as a white, as a Christian, a Hindu, Muslim, or Jew, then that automatically involves turning one's back on one's original God consciousness. So if you pray to God like that, either consciously or unconsciously, "Dear Lord, I want to play this role to perfection. I want to be the most popular boy in school. I want to be the greatest scholar. I want to be a great athlete. I want to be in the flash lights of cameras, etc., etc." Whatever we want, fame, knowledge, strength, wealth, renunciation, whatever, the Lord goes as far as he deems that we deserve in order to have those desires fulfilled. And thus we forget him. By the same token, if we want to remember God, he helps us. He says in Bhagavad Gita, "Tesham satada yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam ubhyantitai." To those who constantly worship me in love and devotion, dadami buddhi, buddhi means intelligence, dadami means I give. I give the intelligence, yenamam ubhyanti he, by which they can come to me. Ultimately, the choice is up to us. Do you want Krishna to help you to forget him? Because he'll do that. He, after all, don't forget, one of the opulences of God is vairagya. Five of his opulences are wealth, fame, knowledge, strength. But the sixth opulence is called vairagya, or renunciation. And that means that if you want it badly enough, he will even help you to forget him. Just like a little boy, child, he asked the father, "Dear father, can I leave home and go out on my own?" And the father says, "No, that's not good for you. Stay here, I'll take care of you." And the boy persists. He says, "I want to leave home. I insist on leaving home." The father tells him, if you go out of home, you have no money, you have no friends, you can be victimized by anybody, even killed. He says, please don't go out of home. But if the son ultimately persists, he persists over and over and over again, then the father says, all right, go out of home, but follow this and that and this and that and this and that instructions. Similarly, ultimately, the Lord will give in to our repeated foolish request to live independently from Him. And scriptural injunctions are basically the guidelines which He gives for us. If we insist on going into this material world, He says, all right, if you have to go into exile, if you have to leave your original home, the kingdom of God, then please try to follow these rules and regulations which are given in scriptures. That way you can make the best use of a bad bargain. You can live relatively happy, relatively free from suffering, inasmuch as you will be aware of the laws of the universe and be able to harmonize with them, and so therefore not come into great conflict with the basic facts of nature. The most unfortunate fallen person is that person who doesn't care for scripture, who acts whimsically. He is happy neither in this life, nor in the next life, nor in any of his future lives. That entails total neglect, total rejection of God in any and all of His aspects. But He leaves the choice up to us. The best choice, of course, is to follow His instructions and stay in the spiritual world. The second best choice is, having come to this material world, having found out its shortcomings, then follow scriptures, live peacefully, and try to get back to that original position as quickly as we can. And Krishna, just as He has facilitated our coming here, He will even be more eager to facilitate our getting back home, back to Godhead. Because insofar as we choose this material world, we'll never be happy. You'll never wrest happiness from this material world, because this material world is not a place you go to be happy. Just like the prison house. You don't go to the prison house for a vacation. No travel agent sells tours to San Quentin or Folsom Prison. You never see in the travel section of the newspaper advertisement, 499 days, 4 days, 3 nights in Folsom Prison. You don't go to prison to be happy. If anyone is so foolish as to buy a ticket to prison and who thinks he'll be happy, what can you say about it? Say someone wants to drink water. So it's a choice between going to a lush tropical rainforest or going to the desert. Instead of going to the rainforest, he goes to the desert. Krishna will facilitate you, whether you want to come here or stay in the spiritual world. He will facilitate you. Unfortunately, we've made the wrong choice. We're looking for happiness in the wrong place. Or someone might argue, well, I'm happy. I got a Porsche car. I'm on my third wife. I've got plenty of money in the bank. People see me on movie screens all over the country and they faint at the very sight of me. I'm happy. All right. We're not denying that you have your peaks of happiness. But if you're happy now in this life, just think upon what your happiness is contingent. Your happiness is contingent upon the fact of your having taken a human birth. If you hadn't taken a human birth, you certainly wouldn't be enjoying this much happiness. Your happiness is contingent upon your having good looks, intelligence, on your having been born not only a human, but a human in the United States of America, because there are plenty of other people in human bodies in other countries who are not nearly as happy as we are. So your happiness is contingent upon so many things. In your next life, there's no guarantee that you'll look beautiful. There's no guarantee that you'll be a human. There's no guarantee that you'll be American. Beginning from birth, everything is fixed up. Whatever type of birth that you get, your pains and pleasures are automatically meted out for you. And what determines what type of birth we get? It is determined by our thoughts at the end of our previous life. When we died in our past life, certain thoughts rose to the surface, certain desires, certain attachments, certain desires that we didn't get to fulfill in that life that we're still lingering about. As a result of those desires, after which we were hankering at the moment of death in our last life, our present body is fixed up and determined. Yam yam bhapishmanan bhava tyajati ante kalevaram says that whatever state of consciousness one is in at the time of death, that will determine the body that he gets at the next life. Today I have one type of a body. It may be human, may be good looking, may be a movie star. And I'm acting in a certain way and defining myself as being happy. But tomorrow, I'm going to get another body and another chapter begins. And this is the meaning of material entanglement. This is what it means to be entangled. If you get a dog's body, you act like a dog. And you think like a dog, you identify with a dog. As soon as you get a particular type of a birth, everything is fixed up. And that's called destiny. One man is born with a silver spoon in his mouth. He simply opens his mouth, says a few words, hypnotizes an audience, and gets rich. Without even practically swinging a hammer his whole life, he's got millions in the bank. Another man doesn't have that ability. He works hard all of his life and he never gets rich. He does 20, 40, 50 times more physical work than the man who was born with a silver spoon in his mouth and he's still poverty stricken. Or if your name happens to be Rockefeller or Scaife or Mellon, then, or Rothschild, you automatically get born into an inheritance of millions of dollars which you cannot even spend in your whole life long. So what is the... Do you think birth is by accident, that there's no previous cause? Why one takes birth in this way, another one takes birth in this way? It is all fixed up by our previous lives. That they call destiny. An intelligent man, he doesn't worry about the pains and pleasures in this life. Tasyaiva heto priyate te kovido nalavyate yat brahmatimu variyadaha talavyate dukavaranyataha sukham kalena gabhira ramasa. He knows that in due course of time, both pains and pleasures will come his way. This material existence is a mixture of pains and pleasures. In this body, there may be a little bit more pleasure than pain, but pain is always present in some degree. In the next body, maybe a lot more pain and little or no pleasure. But pains and pleasures have to simply be tolerated. What the pains and pleasures in this life are going to be are already fixed up. I don't have any more control over the pains and pleasures of this life. But what I do have control over is what type of a birth I'll get in the next life. If I were living in the body of a pig, say right now, I wouldn't have that ability to change my consciousness. The pig's consciousness is attached to stool and garbage. And there's nothing that the pig can do or become aware of that he will change his consciousness so that he'll get a higher type of an awareness, a higher type of a body. But the human being, he can change his consciousness. He can change his consciousness. Many people actually have pig-like mentality. The things they eat nowadays are abominable. They'll eat anything and everything. I've seen people rummaging in garbage cans, in dumpsters. They're eating anything and everything. And even in the restaurants, people will go and pay $30 to eat some lobster and see it cooked alive in front of their eyes. Or you go to Bangkok and you'll see all kinds of squids and sparrows and rats' brains. You can't imagine what people get a taste for. But because you have a human body, you can change that taste. And according to the taste that you develop, your next birth is fixed up. Purusha prakritishto hi bhunkte prakriti janguna. There are three modes of nature. Goodness means vegetarian foods which are attained without excessive violence. Passion, that means foods which are spicy and pungent. And there's the mode of ignorance, which is mostly rotten foods which are attained after much cruelty, like meat, etc. So depending upon what our taste is, we associate with one or another of these modes of material nature. And if we're associated with a mode of goodness, we get a higher birth as a demigod. Urdvam gatanti sattvasha, madhye tishtanti rajasaha. If we associate with a mode of passion, we come back as a human being. If we associate with a mode of ignorance, we come back as an animal. And the shoe is on the other foot. Instead of having some piece of flesh on the end of our fork, next life we become a piece of flesh on the end of someone else's fork. But that doesn't have to happen. It doesn't have to happen if we exercise our free choice. If we exercise our right of choice in favor of freedom. Freedom from sinful activity means freedom from suffering. We can revive Satchidananda, our original nature of knowledge, bliss, and eternity. This verse here says, Abhivaktam Chabhutanam. The super soul, or God within the heart, appears to be divided. How does he appear to be divided? Take, for instance, a sunny day. Now you ask someone in Carolina, where is the sun? He says, it's shining on my head. You ask someone in Pennsylvania, where is the sun? He says, it's shining on my head. You interview 1,000 people and each one says, the sun is shining on his head. And yet we know that the sun is one. Similarly, God is within the heart of every living being. God is in my heart. I can say that truthfully and factually. At the same time, he's not only in my heart. He's not restricted to my heart. He is also a uniquely individual personality who lives in the spiritual world. I am within my heart. God is within my heart. I am in this body as the occupier or the lessee. And God is in this body as the owner, or the lessor, if you will. I know what's going on in my body. I don't know what's going on in others' bodies. But as the owner of all bodies, and he who is also present in all bodies, accompanying the individual souls, he knows everybody's body. I am limited to my apartment. You are limited to your apartment. But Krishna is the owner of the whole apartment complex, which is composed of 8,400,000 species of life, and he is simultaneously everywhere at any given point in time, and therefore his knowledge is unlimited. He knows everything about everybody's body. Sarvatipani param tat sarvatatsiturumakam sarvatashruti maloke sarvamavritatishtiti. His eyes and ears are everywhere, his hands and faces and legs and heads are everywhere. In this way, the super soul exists. And because he's everywhere, you can offer him service from any part of the universe, and he's able to accept it. If someone offers me service 10,000 miles away, I'm not able to accept it. Even though the Supreme Personality of God, it is millions and millions of light years away, if you offer him a flower, fruit, leaf, or water here, he will accept it within a second. Just like a bank. A bank can accept a deposit from any branch. Goloka eva navasati akiratna bhuti. God never leaves his transcendental planet in the spiritual world. He never leaves there. He always remains there, engaged in his intimate pastimes with the gopis. And yet, Goloka, that planet is called Goloka Vrindavan. Goloka nivasati says God never sets foot outside of Vrindavan. At the same time, akiratna bhuto, he's everywhere. He is simultaneously one with his creation and different from his creation. Some say, well, if he's everywhere, how can he be at home? If I go out of my house, if I go from my house in West LA to Hollywood, then if I'm in Hollywood, I'm not in West LA. So they say, if God is everywhere, how can he be in his own abode? But if God, Yasha Prabha, he says that I am everywhere in fullness. God is fully present within everyone's heart, fully present within the atom. If he's fully present everywhere, then he is also fully present in his own abode. He can remain everywhere in every nook and cranny of the universe in fullness. At the same time, he is still in his own original abode, also in fullness. Again, take the example that if I leave my apartment, let's say I have a little business. Let's say I sell telephones out of my apartment. Now, if I leave my apartment and go out somewhere else, I can't take care of a customer who might arrive at my apartment, right? I can only do business in one place at one given point in time. If I'm not in my apartment, I can't do business in my apartment. But God is everywhere in this material world. At the same time, he's doing business in his own original spiritual planet. Actually, it's not real business. It's loving exchanges, ecstatic pastimes. There's a class of men who are called Mayavadis impersonalists who say that because God is everywhere, because he has distributed himself everywhere, he has no original form. Take a piece of paper, tear it up into a million pieces, throw the pieces to the wind. What happened to the original paper? It's gone. So they have this material conception of God, that God is a material thing, and as he expands and creates universes, the original God becomes less. That's not a fact. That's material reasoning. Absolute reasoning means 1 minus 1 equals 1. If you take one complete unit away from the absolute one whole, the absolute one whole remains absolute because he's absolute. Some of the material, you take 1 minus 1 equals 0. The original is no longer there. But in the absolute 1 minus 1, the original 1 is still there. Unless you accept the inconceivable potency of God, you'll never understand him. Our fault is that we try to understand God's power by comparing it with our power. Just like Dr. Frog, who only lives in a well, who doesn't know anything but his well, based on calculations that he's made within his well, he's trying to understand the vastness of the Atlantic Ocean. Nitya Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitanam. God is supplying every living entity. The elephant gets every day his 100 pounds of food, the ant gets his crumbs. Did you ever see a bird die of starvation? Yet in the human society, we have to work hard in order to give food to the poor as if God is unable to do that. It is not that God is unable to feed people. It is not that God has created a universe which is deficient. This universe is full because it comes from the Supreme Full. It is not that he can't afford to feed them, but that is what is called destiny. That they are suffering hunger because of sinful activities in the previous lives. Just like in the hospital, some of the patients are starving. Doesn't mean the hospital can't afford to feed them, but it means that they can't eat right now in order to be cured. Similarly, sometimes little suffering is there in order to awaken us to real consciousness. If we are suffering, then we become more sensitive to others' suffering. We gradually become aware of the suffering which we have caused in the past. And finally, we come to conclude that if I don't cause any suffering in the present, then I will myself not be the butt of suffering in the future. So it is not for want of food that people are starving or suffering. It is basically for want of knowledge. And the real knowledge, the real business in this human form of life, is to revive our original God consciousness. God is within the heart. He's very eager and willing to help us. All we have to do is ask him, and he steps forward and gives us the strength, the intelligence, the understanding by which we can come to him.
You've been listening to commentaries on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Bhagavad Gita is the essence of India's Vedic wisdom and one of the great spiritual and philosophical classics of the world. The ultimate conclusion of the Gita is unconditional loving surrender unto Lord Krishna, which frees one from all sins, bringing one to complete enlightenment and enables one to return to Krishna's eternal spiritual abode.